What if your depression isn't just in your head, but actually stems from inflammation in your body? This groundbreaking question forms the core of Edward Bulmer's revolutionary work, challenging 400 years of medical thinking. As a Cambridge psychiatrist with dual expertise in neuroscience and immunology, Bulmer presents compelling evidence that inflammation, the body's response to infection, stress, or injury, directly causes depression by affecting brain function. His book has sparked intense discussion among mental health professionals, with figures like Atul Gawande praising it as a game-changing exploration. Since publication, research in this field has exploded, with major universities establishing immunopsychiatry departments and pharmaceutical companies reconsidering their approach to mental health drug development. This paradigm shift promises not just new treatments, but a fundamental reimagining of how we understand the relationship between mind and body. For over four centuries, Western medicine has operated under the shadow of René Descartes' dualistic philosophy that separated the physical body from the immaterial mind. This artificial division created two parallel medical universes, physical medicine for the body and psychiatry for the mind, with little meaningful interaction between them. The consequences of this split are profound and often tragic, shaping everything from medical education to healthcare delivery systems and insurance coverage policies. When a patient like Mrs. P presents with both rheumatoid arthritis and depression, the rheumatologist dismissively explains her depression as merely a psychological reaction to physical disability. Well, you would be depressed, wouldn't you? This convenient explanation places her mental symptoms outside the rheumatologist's domain, while psychiatric diagnostic manuals paradoxically exclude patients with physical diseases from formal depression diagnoses. The result is a bizarre situation where someone meeting all criteria for major depressive disorder cannot officially receive that diagnosis if they have a physical illness. This diagnostic gap affects millions of patients worldwide, particularly those with chronic conditions like diabetes, heart disease, and autoimmune disorders. This dualistic approach extends beyond diagnostics to treatment, creating dangerous blind spots in patient care. Physicians focus exclusively on physical markers like joint erosion and blood tests, often neglecting to even inquire about mental states despite psychological issues dominating patients' unmet clinical needs. Meanwhile, psychiatrists might avoid physical examinations or dismiss bodily symptoms as psychosomatic, potentially missing serious underlying conditions. The consequences are devastating. Psychiatric patients suffer drastically reduced life expectancy, losing about 10 to 15 years on average, comparable to cancer's impact, not primarily from suicide, but from untreated physical illnesses like diabetes and heart disease. Studies show that individuals with serious mental illness are 2 to 3 times more likely to develop cardiovascular disease and metabolic disorders, yet receive substantially less preventative care. The Cartesian divide also perpetuates stigma and creates barriers to holistic treatment. When depression is segregated to the mental domain, patients often feel personally responsible for their condition, viewing it as a character flaw rather than a legitimate medical condition. If depression is all in the mind, then sufferers tend to blame themselves, feeding into cognitive biases that can escalate to self-harm or suicide. Unlike physical ailments like broken bones that elicit sympathy and shared stories, depression invites silence and social isolation, a virtual quarantine that leaves the depressed person alone to pull themselves together. This isolation is particularly dangerous because social support networks are crucial for recovery from both mental and physical illnesses. The financial implications of this divide are equally problematic. Insurance companies often provide less coverage for mental health treatment, creating economic barriers to care. Medical institutions frequently separate mental health facilities from general hospitals, both physically and administratively, making coordinated care difficult. Even electronic health record systems often fail to integrate mental and physical health information effectively, leading to fragmented care and potentially dangerous medication interactions. After a routine root canal procedure, Bullmore experienced something unexpected. A brief episode of lethargy, social withdrawal, and morbid rumination, essentially mild depression. The symptoms emerged gradually over the following days. He felt unusually tired, avoided social interactions he normally enjoyed, and found himself dwelling on dark thoughts. Traditional medical thinking would separate this into physical and mental domains, the physical inflammation from the dental infection, followed by psychological rumination about mortality. This dualistic explanation assumes his mental state reflected on his physical state rather than being directly caused by it. Looking back, he now sees a simpler explanation. He was momentarily depressed simply because he was inflamed. The inflammatory response in his mouth directly caused changes in his mood and cognition, no psychological intermediary needed. This represents a fundamental shift from dualistic thinking to a continuous chain of physical causation from infection to depression. The experience challenged his previous medical training and opened his eyes to a more integrated view of body and mind. When immune cells in his mouth encountered bacteria, they produced inflammatory proteins called cytokines that circulated in his blood. These cytokines cross the blood-brain barrier to reach his brain, causing his mind to become inflamed. This isn't metaphorical inflammation, but mechanistic, a direct biological pathway from physical trauma to mental state. The cytokines triggered changes in neurotransmitter systems, affected neural circuits involved in mood regulation, and altered brain metabolism in regions associated with depression. This personal insight mirrors what happens in countless patients with inflammatory conditions. About 90% of arthritis patients report fatigue as their primary complaint, and 40% experience depression. Brain fog frequently accompanies these symptoms, manifesting as difficulty concentrating, memory problems, and slowed thinking. Patients with inflammatory bowel disease, multiple sclerosis, and rheumatoid arthritis show similar patterns of mood disturbance and cognitive difficulties. Even conditions like diabetes and obesity, which involve chronic low-grade inflammation, show higher rates of depression than the general population. The evidence linking inflammation and depression is overwhelming, yet medical practice continues to treat these conditions as separate phenomena rather than manifestations of the same underlying process. This disconnect has real consequences for patient care. Antidepressants might be prescribed without addressing the underlying inflammation, or inflammatory conditions might be treated without consideration for their mental health impact. Modern research increasingly suggests that treating inflammation may be as important for mental health as it is for physical health, pointing toward new therapeutic approaches that target both domains simultaneously. To understand how inflammation affects the mind, we must first understand the immune system itself. Unlike other bodily systems concentrated in specific areas, like the digestive system or respiratory system, the immune system exists everywhere because attacks can come from anywhere. Macrophages, big eaters that devour bacteria, guard the perimeter of our bodies, stationed strategically at vulnerable entry points like the gut, lungs, and eyes. They're also positioned throughout internal organs like the spleen, liver, brain, and bones, creating an omnipresent defense network that operates like a sophisticated military force. These immune cells communicate through two main mechanisms, direct cell-to-cell contact and cytokine secretion. Cytokines are protein messengers that circulate through the bloodstream like inflammatory hormones, binding to receptors on other immune cells to activate them. When a macrophage encounters invaders, it broadcasts alarm signals via cytokines, calling other macrophages to abandon their posts and join the fight. This complex signaling system involves dozens of different cytokine types, each carrying specific instructions that can trigger inflammation, fever, or other immune responses. The immune system's innate capacity for rapid threat detection relies on macrophages trained by evolution to respond instantly to non-self entities. This speed is crucial because bacteria can reproduce exponentially, doubling every 20 minutes, meaning a single bacterium could theoretically become millions within hours. Each macrophage must autonomously make snap friend or foe decisions without consultation, using pattern recognition molecules called toll-like receptors that identify common bacterial and viral signatures. Though we may encounter novel pathogens, our macrophages carry ancestral wisdom, genetic programming refined through 150,000-plus years of human evolution, allowing them to recognize threats our ancestors faced repeatedly. The immune system's formidable power comes with a dark side. Like military conflicts, inflammatory wars cause substantial collateral damage. When macrophages engulf bacteria, they release digestive enzymes and bacterial fragments that prove toxic to innocent bystander cells. The battlefield aftermath includes oxidative stress, tissue damage, and the release of inflammatory mediators that can spread throughout the body. Prolonged inflammation can permanently degrade healthy tissues, replacing muscle, skin, and bone with fibrous scars. This process, known as fibrosis, can affect virtually any organ system. The collateral damage extends to the brain when inflammation becomes systemic, affecting mood and cognition through multiple pathways, disrupting neurotransmitter systems, altering brain cell metabolism, and compromising the blood-brain barrier. Recent research has linked chronic inflammation to conditions ranging from depression and anxiety to cognitive decline and neurodegenerative diseases, highlighting the critical importance of maintaining immune system balance. Depression's medical history predates inflammation, tracing back to ancient Greece, where melancholia was recognized through emotional suffering, angor animi, and pessimistic thinking, cogitation deficit. The Hippocratic physicians attributed it to excess black bile in the body, treating it as a physiological imbalance of humors. While this theory persisted until the 1850s, it was eventually replaced by mechanistic medicine. After World War II, a chemical revolution transformed psychiatry. Hydrazine, a German rocket fuel, was repurposed by pharmaceutical companies like Roche to create iprothiazid, initially developed as a tuberculosis treatment. When tested at Seaview Hospital in 1952, it not only halted TB, but produced remarkable psychological effects. Patients became energized, social, and hungry. The hospital, once a grim sanatorium where patients awaited death, emptied as recovered individuals returned to normal life. This accidental discovery led to the development of various antidepressants, culminating in Prozac's release in 1987. The drug quickly achieved unprecedented cultural status, appearing on Newsweek's cover by 1990 and generating $2 billion in sales by 1995. Yet this marked not the dawn, but the sunset of antidepressant innovation. No major new treatments have emerged since 1990, unlike other medical fields that have seen dramatic advances. The fundamental problem with antidepressant development was its backward logic. While tuberculosis treatment started with identifying the causative bacteria and then developing drugs to target it, depression treatment began with an accidental observation, elation in TB patients, and worked backward, inferring that depression must result from low adrenaline levels because drugs that increased it seemed to help. Though Prozac's development followed a more logical path, starting with a target, serotonin, and developing a drug to hit it, the target itself was never properly validated. Without biomarkers, we're forced to treat all depression as if it were the same condition with the same underlying cause, prescribing identical treatments through trial and error. This one-size-fits-all approach to a condition affecting roughly 10% of the global population at any time seems absurdly reductive, as implausible as attributing such widespread suffering to unmeasurable black bile or unquantifiable libido. The blood-brain barrier, BBB, was once taught as an impermeable wall separating the brain from the body's immune system, a physical manifestation of Cartesian dualism. This dogma reinforced the notion that physical inflammation couldn't possibly affect mental states. We now know this model was fundamentally wrong. The BBB isn't impenetrable. It has gaps allowing proteins to pass through, and the endothelial cells forming this barrier actively communicate immune signals. These cells detect inflammatory cytokines in the blood and relay these signals to microglial cells in the brain. The barrier can even permit white blood cells to squeeze through, and we've discovered lymphatic vessels that allow immune cells to move between brain and body. Most fascinating is the inflammatory reflex mediated by the vagus nerve, which detects cytokine levels in the body and sends signals to the spleen to reduce inflammation, a homeostatic negative feedback loop that maintains balance. This reflex can even be stimulated through the auricle of the ear, a technique dating back to medieval times. More modern approaches include implantable electrical stimulators that can control inflammation in conditions like rheumatoid arthritis by stimulating the vagus nerve, literally turning inflammation on and off at the flick of a switch. When microglial cells are activated by inflammatory signals, they become more mobile and aggressive, producing their own cytokines that amplify inflammation in the brain. This activation causes significant collateral damage to surrounding nerve cells, much like inflammatory responses elsewhere in the body. While the brain doesn't form mechanical scarring like arthritic joints, it suffers in other ways. Nerve cells die or shrink, synaptic connections become rigid rather than plastic, and neurotransmitter systems like serotonin are disrupted. Most critically, inflammation disrupts serotonin production by diverting its raw material tryptophan to make toxic compounds like kynurenine instead. This simultaneously reduces available serotonin and produces neurotoxins that overexcite and ultimately kill nerve cells. This mechanism explains why many treatment-resistant depression patients who don't respond to SSRIs show signs of inflammation. The inflammatory process is working directly against the medication's intended effects. Around 1990, as Prozac reached peak popularity, a few obscure papers began suggesting connections between the immune system and depression. Titles like The Macrophage Theory of Depression proposed the radical notion that mood states might relate to white blood cell activity, effectively connecting mind and body across the Cartesian divide. This idea was initially considered scientifically transgressive, even flaky, and faced significant resistance. The breakthrough insight was recognizing that common experiences, feeling depressed after physical injuries, infections, or vaccinations, might be explained through immune system mechanisms. Scientists began measuring inflammatory biomarkers like cytokines in depressed patients, applying modern immunology to understand human behavior. Between 1992 and 2014, studies collectively demonstrated that people with depression have moderately but significantly increased levels of inflammatory markers like C-reactive protein, CRP, and certain cytokines. The probability of these differences occurring by chance was approximately 1 in 10,000. Beyond the traditional case control studies, dimensional approaches examining the general population found similar patterns. A massive Danish study of 73,131 people revealed that those experiencing even low-grade depressive symptoms had significantly higher CRP levels, with an almost dose-response relationship between inflammation and negative thinking. To establish causality between inflammation and depression, researchers needed to determine whether inflammation precedes depression. Longitudinal studies provided compelling evidence. A 2014 study following 15,000 children from ages 9 to 18 found that those with cytokine levels in the top third at age 9 were about 1.5 times more likely to develop depression by 18, despite showing no depression at the initial assessment. The most direct evidence comes from experimental studies where healthy volunteers receive typhoid vaccinations that temporarily increase inflammatory markers. Brain imaging shows this activates brain regions associated with emotional expression, causing mild depression even in people with no psychiatric history. This provides a clear causal chain: vaccination, inflammation, brain changes, depressed mood. Stress is one of the most powerful yet poorly understood causes of depression. Major life events, especially those involving loss of relationships and social rejection, can increase depression risk up to 9-fold, with approximately 80% of depression episodes preceded by stressful events. The most depressing stresses combine loss with humiliation. A man being divorced by his wife faces twice the depression risk compared to initiating divorce himself. While the connection between stress and depression is clear, the mechanism has been murky. The traditional explanation suggests depression is a natural, perhaps moral, response to adversity. However, recent research points to inflammation as the missing link. Bereavement and major life stressors reduce life expectancy. People literally die of broken hearts, with bereaved individuals facing double the risk of heart attack or stroke. This stubborn fact suggests an immunological explanation for how social stress translates into physical vulnerability. We can now construct a plausible narrative of how stress causes depression through inflammation. The evidence shows that stressful events, from public speaking to bereavement, trigger inflammatory responses in the body. Macrophages become activated and pump cytokines into circulation, with studies showing burnt-out schoolteachers have angrier macrophages than satisfied ones, which become even more inflamed under stress. But rather than a simple linear path from stress to inflammation to depression, these relationships likely form vicious cycles. Depression itself creates social stress through withdrawal, stigmatization, deteriorating relationships, and economic hardship, which then triggers more inflammation. This circular pattern explains why childhood trauma victims enter adulthood with immune systems set on hair trigger, ready to overreact to minor stressors with disproportionate inflammatory responses. From an evolutionary perspective, this connection between social stress and inflammation makes perfect sense. For early humans 150,000 years ago, infection was the primary survival threat. Genes that enhanced inflammatory responses would be strongly selected, as they helped people survive childhood infections. These same genes drove sickness behavior, social withdrawal, reduced activity, decreased appetite, anxiety, and disturbed sleep. This behavior served multiple purposes: conserving energy for fighting infection, protecting the tribe from contagion through self-isolation, and maintaining vigilance against predators during vulnerability. Most advantageously, genes that could predict infectious threats by detecting social competition or danger would preemptively activate the immune system before injury occurred. The same genes that once protected our ancestors now make us prone to inflammation-triggered depression in response to social stress. Recent genetic evidence supports this theory. The single gene most significantly associated with depression, olfactomedin 4, controls gut inflammatory response to bacteria. Despite billions invested in depression research since Prozac's 1989 launch, pharmaceutical innovation has stagnated with almost nothing working. Companies have rationally retreated, slashing R&D budgets for mental health. The business model was fundamentally flawed, treating depression as homogenous while following a predictable pattern. Target brain chemicals like serotonin, screen compounds, test on questionable animal models, then conduct increasingly expensive human trials with success rates below 10%. We must abandon the panacea approach to depression. Like cancer, depression isn't one disease but many, with different causes requiring personalized treatments. Anti-inflammatory drugs could work exceptionally well for patients with inflammation-driven depression, potentially over 100 million people worldwide if using CRP biomarkers at 3 mg per liter threshold. Despite industry skepticism, 20% probability of success, dozens of existing anti-inflammatory drugs could be repurposed for depression, potentially bringing treatments to market in 5 to 10 years rather than the typical 20. Reanalysis of secondary mental health endpoints from anti-inflammatory drug trials shows promising antidepressant effects, approximately 0.4 effect size compared to SSRIs 0.2. Beyond drugs, vagal nerve stimulation, already licensed for depression since 2005, shows promise by reducing inflammatory cytokines through the inflammatory reflex. While traditionally thought to work like an electrical SSRI by increasing serotonin in the brain, it may actually function as an electrical anti-cytokine antibody by reducing inflammatory signals in the body. Additionally, mind-body therapies like meditation and Tai Chi have been shown to reduce inflammatory gene expression in white blood cells. This suggests the mind can be trained to control bodily inflammation, possibly explaining how psychological treatments help depression. Future approaches might include cytokine-guided psychotherapy using inflammatory markers as biofeedback to measure how meditation progressively controls inflammation. The implications extend beyond depression to other psychiatric conditions. Among the 320 genes now linked to schizophrenia risk, the strongest is complement component 4, C4, which produces an inflammatory protein. This immune system gene increases schizophrenia risk and damages synaptic connections in mice. Similarly, in Alzheimer's disease, the inflammatory reaction to abnormal proteins may cause more nerve cell death than the original plaques and tangles. The links between inflammation and depression are now clear beyond reasonable doubt, yet medical practice remains slow to integrate this knowledge. Despite overwhelming evidence connecting bodily inflammation, brain function, and mood disorders, healthcare systems continue to operate along Cartesian divides, separating physical from mental health. What would happen if someone with depression asked their doctor about inflammation's role in their condition? Unfortunately, not much would change in their treatment. While a doctor might test for inflammatory markers like C-reactive protein, CRP, finding moderate inflammation, like 4.8 milligrams per liter, wouldn't lead to clear treatment options. Anti-inflammatory drugs like aspirin, though theoretically sensible, lack solid evidence for depression and carry safety risks like stomach bleeding. The harsh reality is that despite scientific advances in understanding immune-brain interactions, there are currently no inflammation-targeting antidepressant treatments available. Knowledge has advanced, but practical treatment options haven't followed. This gap between science and practice represents both a challenge and an opportunity. The future of mental health care likely lies in precision medicine approaches that identify specific inflammatory subtypes of depression and target them with personalized treatments. This might include biomarker-guided therapy selection, combining anti-inflammatory medications with traditional antidepressants for those with elevated inflammatory markers, or using vagal nerve stimulation to regulate immune responses in treatment-resistant cases. Most fundamentally, we need to reimagine the healthcare system itself, breaking down the artificial barriers between physical and mental health. This means training physicians to recognize and address psychological symptoms and physical illness, equipping psychiatrists with tools to monitor and treat inflammation, and creating integrated care teams that treat the whole person rather than isolated symptoms. By acknowledging the fundamental connection between mind and body through inflammation pathways, we can finally move beyond Descartes' 400-year-old dualism toward a more scientifically grounded and humane approach to mental health. The inflamed mind isn't just a metaphor, it's a biological reality that demands a revolution in how we understand and treat depression.